This month will mark the 96th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, women's suffrage, the right to vote. It's hard to believe that Hillary Clinton will be the first woman to be a candidate for president in a major party. 96 years. And as we saw during the Democratic National Convention, the fact became pretty clear. It brought emotion to many women who have never been able to see someone of their kind, someone of that looks like them, in that position. Joining me now is Rebecca Sives. Sives, the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. She's also the program director for Women in Public Leadership, an initiative at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
So I'm interested in this. I didn't realize that August was Suffrage Month, and yeah. You know, you sent me the actual.
I know. I just thought that would be fun.
Yeah, it's fun to see the actual doctrine from the 19th Amendment. But 96 years. I mean, right. Talk about. I mean, you don't study necessarily suffrage, but as somebody who knows about it, I mean, was it difficult to pass that? Was it something
yes.
that 96 years ago it was political climate like it is today?
The political climate in some ways was quite similar in terms of the very, very strong feelings for and against. And really, it started in 1848 with women gathering at Seneca Falls and issuing a so-called Declaration of Sentiments, in which they talked about the right to vote, and from 1848 to 1920. So, you know, and there were lots of sort of steps along the way, including after the Civil War when African Americans got the right to vote, but African American men. And that was another, you know, point at which people recognized that notwithstanding color, gender was a factor. So, and then it took another 40 years, and people chained themselves and did all kinds of things. And you know, here we are 96 years later. I thought about it today because it's my mom's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah. And thank you. And my mother was born 4 years after.
Wow.
So, you know, and I have friends who are older whose mothers were born before suffrage. And, of course, we saw this 100-year-old woman at the DNC, you know, talking about it. And so you mentioned passion and joy a minute ago in another context. There's a lot of passion and joy among a lot of women in this country.
Well, you saw it, I mean, at the Democratic National Convention. And you know, we talked about it here on the program, just the idea that so many different women were expressing a feeling. You know,
right.
a sort of this is something I haven't. This is history, something I haven't seen in my lifetime. I'm interested in how that translates because, you know, you see that sort of play out in social media, and we almost, you know, it was definitely a big thing in 2008 with Barack Obama being the first black president. But it doesn't seem like Hillary Clinton is pushing that as sort of a campaign platform.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I think that at the convention itself, the introduction by her daughter, the movie they showed beforehand, there were some other media pieces they did, really did emphasize that. But once she hit the campaign trail the next day, I guess on the bus tour, she started talking about policy and qualifications and why this was an important point in history. And I think that, you know, it's kind of the same challenge that President Obama had in 2008, you know, yes, this is a historic moment, and yes, I take pride, and people ought to take pride in this advance in our nation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm a candidate with ideas and policies and a platform, and I really want to convince people who may doubt that I'm the right person to be president.
You know, it's for staying on the suffrage line, I mean, from the idea of the right to vote to exercising that right to vote to becoming a voting bloc. Women have become a voting
right.
bloc in the way that, you know, you'll see it in CNN and every place. They're like, well, who's going for who? It's amazing to me that hasn't produced more women candidates over time. The fact that it's such a powerful bloc that it seems like candidates and politicians are trying to reach out and trying to woo that vote.
Well, there has been a sequence over time where the bloc has become larger and larger. You know, there was a point in the mid-70s after the Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade, which was, beyond the issue of reproductive health, was a whole statement about women's autonomy and women's right to participate in the workplace in a variety of ways. And there was a bloc of women at that time who started, you know, that's the Hillary Clinton generation, pushing for women's participation in politics. There was another in the mid-80s when Barbara Mikulski, who's retiring mm-hmm. this year, mm-hmm. was elected to the U.S. Senate, and then again in the early 90s. So it's been a gradual process, not as fast as many would like. But as we sit here today, the latest polls I saw as I was, you know, before I came over, showed Clinton 24 points ahead among women, and that's women of various kinds. So there's a substantial understanding, it seems to me, that she's the candidate of women.
Sure. Rebecca Sives, my guest. She's the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. She's also the program director for Women in Public Leadership, the initiative at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. I'm going to take a quick break. We come back. I really want to talk about sexism in this election. And something that I've seen much more, and I've been more keen to, we've seen it, you know, from the way that questions are being thrown at the candidates, the way that the overall sort of stereotype of, you know, who's lying, who's dishonest, the continued sort of way that both candidates are couched. Mm-hmm. You know, it's becoming more and more clear that they're, you know, and some critics will say that, you know, sexism is at play. So we'll talk with Rebecca about how it is sort of manifesting itself in the 2016 presidential race. More with us. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Rebecca Sives, my guest. She's the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. She's a program director for Women in Public Leadership, an initiative at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. We're talking about the 2016 election, and one thing that I've seen, and I've seen this sort of eloquently told on social media. Someone will put together a clip of all the right. questions that are being asked of Hillary Clinton and right. the questions being asked of Donald Trump.
You saw
Trump.
The same thing
yeah,
I saw.
Right. But how does sexism, you've worked on a lot of different campaigns mm-hmm. in your life, you've been in politics, how does sexism usually manifest itself when it comes to a political campaign?
Well, the first manifestation is the barrier to getting in the first place. And I think that, you know, there's an assortment of reasons that have been determined for that happening. Men get asked, women don't. Men see a problem, they say, I want to be a state senator. A woman sees the same problem. She says, I got to go to school and study it some more. So, I mean, the first barrier that's essentially based on gender is the access. You know, the second barrier is the same sort of attitudinal framework in the political and governmental environment that you see in other large institutions in mm-hmm. which, you know, women don't advance at the same rate. They don't, you know, I guess they have to get equal pay, but if they're not advancing at the same rate, they have unequal pay. They don't get asked to be, you know, in special opportunities that may lead to other things. I think we've only had, for instance, in the campaign side, two women who've run presidential campaigns ever. You know, there's a dozen women who could do that sitting in Washington today.
Is it because the slating process and the sort of major party process is just mm-hmm. a good old boys club or you know, that kind of thing where it's the same kind of thing historically?
Historically, it was. I mean, you know, people, and you've heard this in the business context too, people consider and offer opportunities and promote the people they know who are sitting around in the locker room with them or the golf club or, you know, the bar. I mean, it sounds sort of silly or parochial, but it's still true. And, you know, people are comfortable with people that are like them. Well, a woman is not like them. You know, what's she really going to be like when we have to discuss this? And, I mean, I can tell you from my own experience as a public official, I am of the generation that was, you know, the only woman in the room many times. You know, it's different when you're the only one. And, you know, a person of color will tell you that as well. You're not part of the group. There isn't this common mm-hmm. understanding, and therefore you're treated differently. And usually the differently is unequal. So I don't think it's any worse in politics.
Right.
But it's definitely a factor. And I think witness, you know, the continuing, you know, fascination with, you know, Hillary's hair or whatever.
Well, it also, I mean, there's been movements in business and tech sectors,
sure.
You know, the lean in concept and,
right.
And, you know, and also at the same time, these stereotypes and generalizations where, you know, a woman comes in and she may be aggressive and therefore, you know, oh, this is too much, you know, as opposed mm-hmm. to a man doing the same thing. In politics, it seems to be similar because Hillary Clinton has gotten a bad rap.
Yes.
For essentially being a politician, I hate to say that, but also, you know, everything that she's done, you know, pushing forward things. I mean, there has been this sort of rap that she just is too aggressive or nobody likes her. She's all the kind of same stuff that we've already kind of processed in the business world.
Well, I think that's right. I think you hit the nail on the head that politics requires perhaps more than any other profession, you know, singing your own praises, pushing yourself forward, you know, and if you're a woman, you have to do that, or if you're a man, you have to do that. But it's non-traditional behavior for a woman. And I think that in that context, that was one of the reasons why you saw at the Democratic Convention the great emphasis on her being a grandmother, on her being a mother, on her being a wife, on her sitting at the kitchen table during that video, you know, that they showed at the outset. I mean, there's still this consciousness of, you can't be too different from other women while you're being really
assertive.
So that's
all politics. I mean, in the way that that's on purpose to almost relate to women in a way that, I mean, as opposed to putting her in a suit and in a boardroom and showing her, you know, taking down Osama bin Laden in a video.
Well, I mean, she also has to project authority. I mean, the POTUS is the most important person in the world, right? So there's this balance that has to be struck. I think what we're saying is that because sexism still exists broadly, so to speak, that any woman candidate has to, any woman who's contemplating a political career has to find that way to balance. You know, yes, I'm a politician, I'm going to put myself out there, but yes, I'm also a woman you can relate to, whether you're a man or a woman.
It seems in this election, and you know, trying to keep the names out of it, I guess, you know, Hillary mm-hmm. Clinton, Donald Trump, but regardless of who they are, it seems like if a woman is running for the office of president for the first time, is actually a nominee for a major party, this election is a tough one because the person she's running against isn't necessarily afraid of sort of sexist backlash.
She's not afraid. Contrary.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it's riling up a base that says, yeah, enough of this PC stuff. You know, like he should be able to say what he wants to say. But I mean, as opposed to maybe another politician who is going to be a little bit more respectful of the issues that historically, you know, preceded.
Well, I kind of think, I mean, I think you're right. He has, you know, it's on paper and in print all over the place, the kinds of statements he's made about women in general, forgetting his opposition in particular. I think that just belies a lack of respect. And to me, I think what's going on there is, you know, I mean, I grew up in a family that was intensely patriotic, you know, and my mother was an immigrant. You know, I've seen my mother kiss the American soil. I mean, we were taught that, you know, public service was the highest calling. And in that highest calling are people who know the Constitution.
Are going to show respect for people.
Show respect for others, who care about public policy, who respect their opponents, who understand that a lot of time it's about compromise and not about bullying. That's not going to get you there.
Right. I'm interested, and this is something that I think a lot of voters are trying to differentiate between the idea of our attacks on Hillary Clinton and, you know, the dishonest claim, the lying claim, mm-hmm. it seems to be the big one that people just
right.
really can't trust her. Are they rooted in sexism in the idea that, you know, this is the first woman presidential uh-huh. candidate? Or is there a way to divide it to say, no, they're rooted in the fact that Hillary Clinton has been a lifer politician who we've known since 1990, 1991, at least in the public sphere, and we've seen her go through so many different flip-flops and different plan of ways. As a politician, is it okay to not like Hillary Clinton because she's a politician?
Well, I mean, lots and lots of politicians, from the president and on down, change positions on a pretty regular basis. That's just part of that MO. That's what they have to do in many situations. The question of dishonesty is something else, whether it's man or woman. And I guess what I would say is that what's been shown in the political science literature is that, you know, women in public life, whether in business or in politics, are sort of held to a higher standard of, so to speak, moral and ethical behavior. So the higher you are, the further you fall, right? That's kind of the, and I think in Hillary Clinton's situation, the combination of being held to that higher standard and having changed her policy positions on issues that people think are substantial, you know, sort of combined to say, well, who is this woman really? And therefore, do I trust her? Not necessarily a logical strain of thought, but an understandable one.
Let me ask you, I mean, the book you've written, Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. Obviously, having a candidate for president is going to encourage women to run for other public offices. But this campaign is nasty, and it's dirty. And is it the kind of thing that could have an adverse effect on women saying, you know what, I don't want anything to do with this?
So I'll tell you something interesting. You know, after my book was published, I did lots of speaking. I went all over the country. I mean, I was in the middle of Manhattan. I was in the Delta in Mississippi. And, you know, I mean, really differing places. And the thing that I found, you know, the women who came, and it was mostly women, to hear me talk and buy a book and so on, regardless of their vast difference in kind, all shared this desire to be in public office. And so I think that, you know, there's a set of women, this is what they want to do, just like there's a set of men, this is what they want to do. And I can tell you that they, you know, the issue isn't worrying so much about, you know, I don't want to be a surgeon. Well, so what? There are lots of people who want to be surgeons, right? So, but if I want to be a surgeon and I need a scholarship to go to medical school and I need to get training, then I should have that opportunity. So the book and the conversation here, and I think the effort is about making sure that the women who do want to do it, who understand it's going to be difficult, but, you know, that they have the opportunity. I think that's the thing that I, you know, that they can go out there if they want to.
Rebecca Sive is the author of Every Day is Election Day, A Woman's Guide to Winning Any Office from the PTA to the White House. She's also the program director for Women in Public Leadership, an initiative at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. And she'll be joining us throughout the election season here on The Download. Rebecca, good to see you.
Thank you.